There are a few seats left for this Wednesday's live politics show. Join me at 8 p.m. to discuss the Cincinnati mayoral and city council races. RSVP at wvxu.org/CELive. We've all felt the sting of rising utility bills. Can you imagine heating your home with the power it takes to operate a hairdryer? Have you ever heard of a passive house? You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about passive house design are Trilobite Design Principal Architect Scott Hand and Sustainability Director for the City of Cincinnati's Office of Environment and Sustainability, Oliver Kroner. Thanks for being here, Scott and Ollie.
Thank you.
Good to be with you, Lucy.
Great to have you. Scott, explain what passive house design is. I'm guessing a lot of people have no idea what I'm talking about.
That's can be a very loaded question, but many people are familiar with the LEED certification, which is an energy sustainability and benefits that you can design a house to meet. So it's a base level of criteria, and LEED has of far-reaching things that include materials, energy use, mechanical ventilation, all of those different pieces. Passive house is a different type of certification that's solely focused on the energy efficiency of a house. So it can be used to target the things that are most specific about energy use and intensity for a type of building.
So is it different from sustainable building, or is it the same, or are they cousins?
They're cousins. Sustainable building can encompass everything. The passive house certification is specific to that how much energy a building can use. So when we're targeting that passive house level of design, it's got a certain threshold, prescriptive measures that you use to get to a base energy or a maximum energy consumption for a house or a building. It can be used for different types of construction. And the main thing is we're trying to bring that the building energy use down to zero. So it doesn't necessarily need to be zero, but hitting passive house essentially means that it's hitting a maximum threshold compared to other typical code designed buildings.
Wow. And Scott, I understand you designed the first passive house in Cincinnati.
Correct.
You and your family live there now, right? So was it expensive to build? And what kind of difference have you noticed with this house compared to your old house?
So we were in a three-story brick Victorian over in Walnut Hills before this. And we were running 7 space heaters all winter. It was so drafty and so hard to keep comfortable that even after a couple different renovation projects, it wasn't fun to be in. And of course, my desire and love of sustainable construction led me to investigating different options. Been doing this for other people for a long time in different levels of architecture. And so after we found this piece of property over in Mount Airy, it was a kind of an excuse to try and go full in and be an expert in this very specific piece. The quick answer is it's phenomenal, but also the long answer is it's great because the passive house not only allows it to use less energy, but it's way more comfortable. Not only is it just using a substantial, like, lower energy bills across the board, it's not drafty. It keeps the same temperature. It has much higher indoor air quality because it's managing the temperature, the humidity, and the indoor air quality all day long, all year long. So that's one of the biggest benefits in addition to the energy uses.
Ollie, you know, one of the things that's interesting to me is it's not just about energy use. It's also about kind of your carbon footprint. Can you talk about how houses and buildings of all types contribute to planet warming emissions? Because I don't know if a lot of people think about buildings as being a culprit in that, but they really are, aren't they?
Absolutely. I often ask people where they think our carbon comes from, and often they think about tailpipes on cars, which is not wrong. About a third of our emissions come from cars, but about 60% come from our buildings. And that is the energy we use to stay comfortable, like Scott just mentioned, to power lights, our internet, TVs, et cetera. And that all comes from burning fossil fuels to power our lifestyles, right? So the more we can reduce the energy we use at home, at work, and shift to renewable sources of energy, the more we can get to our carbon neutrality goals.
So what kind of difference can something like passive house design make in that regard?
huge. I mean, I think if you look at all of an individual's carbon footprint, probably close to 80% comes from the energy they use at home, right? So the more we can do what Scott is doing and innovate and design homes to be as close to carbon neutral as possible and continuously improving to get there, we were just talking about this in the green room, that is the innovation we need.
Yeah, one of the things I was looking at ahead of this interview is Ollie's right. A huge part of our carbon footprint comes from that, but over 50% of an individual's energy use, just energy, is in their own homes, heating and conditioning it. So that's not even counting running the refrigerator or powering your tablet. That's just keeping your house comfortable.
That's just heating and cooling, not even hot water. That's just heating and cooling.
Right.
Wow. So, yeah, well, we're talking about passive house design. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Scott, you designed and built your passive house brand new, but can these design principles be used in existing homes too? Is there anything you could have done to that Victorian, which I imagine was beautiful to look at, if not comfortable to live in? To have helped in this regard.
It was phenomenal. We loved it, and the location was incredible. But yes and no. So there's a certain amount of like ability that you have to affect an existing house. There's lots of renovation, and there's a thing called a deep energy retrofit, which can be done to existing houses. They're pretty intensive, and they...
Does that also mean expensive?
To a degree, yeah. It's not a problem, but one of the reasons why we chose to do it new is, one, I wanted to solve all of those problems on a new scale, but also when you start to tackle those on an existing house, they have to be done in conjunction with each other. You can't, like I was doing one project at a time over 5 or 6 years, and each one was only getting a little bit of a threshold. In order for it to have a real impact, the passive house strategies kind of have to be done all together. We can dive into the details, but like the three main pieces I have are, they need to be well insulated, airtight, and then have a really good mechanical ventilation system. So doing just one of those at a time won't necessarily hit the threshold of getting to the passive. You kind of have to do all three of those at the same time.
Ollie, we've talked to you about utility bills and all these different strategies many times on the show, but what kind of difference, even if you're trying to tackle these things one at a time on an existing house or structure, can that make a difference in your utility bills, even taking it if you have to take it piecemeal?
Absolutely. I would like to first say that I think one of the things that Scott has done here, which most construction doesn't consider, is often we just look at what it costs to build and people pick the cheaper option rather than thinking about the cost to build and operate. And these buildings are going to be here for a long time. You know, we operate buildings for 100 plus years in Cincinnati. So the more we can think about lifetime costs, the more obvious it becomes that this is what we should do. And often the cost premium on the front end is not that significant compared to the savings over time. I mean, for city facilities, we're seeing about a 10% premium to get to a net zero building. So a building that has essentially no utility bill in perpetuity. So it makes so much sense. But that's for new construction. Similar math can apply to renovation, but we're in a very different starting place. And yes, of course, there are many things homeowners can do, small and large, that will significantly reduce their home energy bill. And I think that's top of mind for a lot of people right now as we see these price increases. We've talked about it before, you know, insulation, LED lighting, air sealing. They're not extremely advanced technologies. They're basics that were not part of building code when most of our building stock was built.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Scott, the Cincinnati chapter of the American Institute of Architects is going to host something called an Icebox Challenge at Homerama. Homerama, we've got a link on our website where people can get details about the dates and location. Can you explain what an Icebox Challenge is and what it's designed to show?
Absolutely. So the Icebox Challenge is a visual and actual representation of the benefits of the passive house design strategies. So we're copying, this has been done a couple other times in other cities. There, we build two boxes. Essentially, they look like small sheds. They have a floor, they've got walls, a roof, and a window in them, but they're built, one is built to existing code required standards for housing construction, then one is built to passive house standards. And the reason it's the icebox challenge is because we literally put a huge block of ice inside of them. The point is you can capture that ice and then don't do anything with it. We're just looking at what the shell of the building can do to maintain the comfort and quality of what's inside of it. So
without any heating or air conditioning or any of that.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, without any of those pieces. So even though I said the heating and ventilation is important for passive house, we're just looking at how an improved shell can help keep something comfortable. And then so we create these boxes. We're going to do it, I believe, that it's starting on September 27th with Homerama. And we're going to let it run for 2 weeks. And then at the end of 2 weeks, we're going to open up the boxes and measure how much ice is left. So you can see what quality and how much better having a nice insulated airtight shell can lend to that sort of keeping the indoor comfort.
And this is not going to be an Al Capone's vault type situation. There will be a visible difference. Like, yes. You'll see something.
Yes. Yeah. In other cities, we're doing it kind of late in the season for doing the tests. So I'm kind of interested to see how much that matters now that we're kind of starting into fall. If this was happening during the middle of summer, like some of the other visuals, then it's really obvious. Sometimes the code minimum one will melt all the way to zero.
Wow. Just a puddle.
Yeah.
Like Frosty's nightmare. Yeah. Ollie, we've talked to you on the show before about the incentives that are out there to make homes more energy efficient. Do passive homes qualify for any of that stuff?
I would have to go line by line to think about that. Certainly, the city offers property tax abatements, and passive homes would qualify for many of those incentives, provided they go through some of the paperwork. There are a number of other incentives at the state level forthcoming that we have talked about, we are eagerly anticipating, that would help pay for many of the items that I think Scott has included. Thinking about the heat pump to heat and cool your home, the induction electric cooktop, your hot water heater. Many of the basic core functions of your home will qualify for incentives, but we are still eagerly waiting for the state to roll those out.
Yeah. Scott, Cincinnati weather can be bonkers. I think we all know it can be freezing cold and dry. It can be humid and hot. It seems like it can be all those things within a week or a month sometimes. Is that a challenge for passive house design? I don't know how long you and your family have lived in your passive house so far, if you've gone through multiple seasons, but what does that mean for passive house design?
That's an extremely important piece of it. The passive house concept started in Europe and then has been adopted in different places around the country, or around the world, in fact. One of the reasons why I wanted to go the full measure and get our house certified here is because the Cincinnati climate is unique. It is actually, like you said, almost the worst of everything.
the best of everything.
It's the best of everything. And but from a climate perspective, we get all of those extremes and we get them all within a calendar year. So that does matter. It's a lot different than building a passive house that's going to be in the southwestern desert or in Canada, where maybe it doesn't get the super high extreme heats. And that does matter. We've been in our house for 3 years, which even though our house was designed for solar, we didn't put it on at the beginning. And one of the reasons was I wanted to see how much energy savings we were actually going to see instead of just kind of guessing at the beginning. We didn't want to oversize the system. So the benefits that we've seen is that it's still been phenomenal. Like, we've used essentially 70% less energy than another normal house would have been, and almost 300% less than we were at their other house.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, so it's been a fantastic reduce in that, and just the comfort level's been phenomenal too. So the piece then is that it's staying cool in the summer and hot in the winter, warm and comfortable.
Yeah. Can I ask, are you using any natural gas?
No. So a big piece of my design piece is in order to bring general energy use down, electrification across the board. So it's got an electric water heater. It's got an electric heat pump for additional humidity control. But otherwise, it's an electric energy recovery ventilator that manages all of the air, indoor air. If I can help it, I don't want to run a new fossil fuel pipe to a new building.
And avoid the cost of the meter.
Absolutely.
Every month. Yeah.
Well, we do have a caller on the line. Hey, Eric, thanks so much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Oh, my comment is I have a passive house rated home that was built in 2011, which I live in Centerville, Ohio.
Congratulations.
Which has 3,000 square feet. The house has 10 and a half feet all the way through it. Living room is 21 feet high, has all glass, 30 by 20 feet. All the windows are big. I have an EVR. I have insulation underneath the slab of 12 inches. My walls are 15 inches thick. There's no through there. They have hard foam and then other kinds of foam. It has triple glass from Germany. And keep my temperature at 80 degrees year-round, and my heating bill and for everything is about $1,700 a year.
Wow, Eric, I'm going to stop you there because you're making me jealous. thanks so much for calling with that information. 2011, that's pretty impressive. I mean, have there been passive homes in the area that for that long?
Yeah, the system has been around for a long time. The U.S., as Ali knows, is not quick to adopt a lot of these new strategies. So that's what he's been pioneering and helping get more folks involved with it. And the more people we can get to notice how much benefit it is for callers like that and for just other people, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Eric. We appreciate that call and thanks for listening.
Can I share a small part of my backstory? So I, after high school, moved out to New Mexico and worked on what are called earthships, which are not passive homes, but they're approaching passive. And got out there and it was a company started and run by Mike Reynolds, who I learned was a DAP graduate here in Cincinnati.
Funny.
And I said, well, how did you end up out here? And he said, well, I wanted to build these, but the building code in Ohio wouldn't allow it. So it just gave me pause. You know, what is the role of policy in driving solutions? And you know, where is the room for innovation within the systems that we do have? And I think Passive House is a great example of an across-the-board winning solution that works within our current code.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Scott, I teased this at the top of the conversation, but I read that some passive homes can be heated with the energy it takes to operate a hairdryer. Is that true? I mean, what is this house meant for your utility bills? I know you said they went way down, but hair dryer, I mean.
So I think that claim would be the heating capacity of a hair dryer. And that's actually 100% true. So in our house, which is, you know, certified passive house, we have an energy recovery ventilator, which constantly brings in fresh air from outside. And it's constantly exhausting the stale air from inside. And inside of that box, This is in place of a regular furnace. So inside of that box, it's actually passing over the heat over a couple filters. One gathers the heat energy that we're trying to maintain, and the other maintains the humidity. So inside of that box, all it's doing is bringing in fresh air, exhausting the old, and then helping maintain the comfort quality that we're looking for. Here in Cincinnati, I've added on an electric heat pump solely to maintain a little bit of extra on the extreme heat conditions. So that heat pump is only 1.5 tons. And that's not much different than what a hairdryer puts out in terms of heating capacity. And we only use it on really hot, humid days in July and August. And it's essentially there to help dehumidify the outdoor air when it's bringing it in.
Wow. So, Ali, for people who can't go all in on passive house design, what's the low-hanging fruit that you would recommend for saving money on utility bills at home and reducing your carbon footprint?
There was a big study that looked at what Americans could do individually to help meet our global climate targets. And the big three things were install a heat pump for your next furnace or air conditioner, make your next car an electric vehicle, and find a way to procure renewable energy. So that could mean solar on your roof, but it could also mean participation in the city's energy aggregation program. So we buy renewable energy for you if you do nothing in Cincinnati. So that makes it easier to check some of those boxes. I will acknowledge those are not necessarily low-hanging fruit.
Right.
They're big steps, but they are all steps that we will make at some point. So the more you can plan and prepare for when the time comes to replace your furnace, make it a heat pump. When the time comes to replace your vehicle, make it electric. That's what we need from individual action across the U.S. Mm-hmm.
Scott, we mentioned that your house was the first passive house in Cincinnati, although there are others in other parts of the region. Are there more now or more in the works? Are you getting people calling you up saying, hey, I want a house like yours?
Yes, and I love that. I like to claim it was the most expensive marketing I've ever done was building the house. But the whole point is I've got folks who call and want that for themselves. So I've got usually well-educated clients who are asking, hey, what can I do? Can we build something like that? Can we go farther? That's all questions I love answering. So it's, yeah, there are more of them and we're building more of them as we speak.
Well, that's exciting. I guess it's marketing that's worked on lots of levels, huh?
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, that's great. Well, I have been talking with Trilobite Design Principal Architect Scott Hand and Sustainability Director for the City of Cincinnati's Office of Environment and Sustainability, Oliver Kroner. Thank you both so much for your time today. It's been great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lizzie.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. And Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to tune in tomorrow, too.